Okay.
Fire away. What's your first question?
Okay. So, well, did you enjoy your experience in Genova at FIM, Fiera Internazionale della Musica?
Well, it was an interesting experience. The crowds, the audience were fantastic. They were so appreciative of what I was talking about, and I think they really loved the photographs and the stories. However, it was a bit of a struggle to make myself heard above the noise, which I thought was very annoying, and I thought that was terrible because it was never presented that way to me. You know, my impression was that was going to stop, and then, you know, I would have a chance to speak with my audience without interference from a lot of bands and stuff. So that was not a good move. I don't think they thought that out correctly. So from that perspective, I was a little upset. However, in the end, it worked out fine. The audience really loved it, but it could have been better organized, had they thought about where to have a conference. When you have a conference, you got to have a room where you can talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but like I said, the most important thing was that the audience was very appreciative, and they came towards me at the end. I thought, oh my God, this is great.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody wanted to shake hands and have a photograph, and you know, I'm a huge fan of Italy. I love Italy very much. Deep in my soul, I think I'm half Italian, even though I may not be. I started coming to Italy in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
You know, driving from London. We would take a ferry and then drive through France and then into Italy. And I have a very good friend of mine, Nick Fenton, who he and I used to drive to Italy quite a few times. And then in 1973...
Mm-hmm.
I bought a house there with my father in Toscana.
Oh, that's awesome.
Un piccolo casa in Toscana.
Yeah.
And, you know, my father lived there 5 months out of the year for many years, and he taught himself Italian. And, you know, I fell in love with Italy again in the 70s, and it's a fascinating place. In fact, when you continue the story to today, my partner, Francesco Sondelli,
mm-hmm.
who is the guy who I've known for about 10 years now here in Los Angeles, he moved from Napoli. He's a musician and composer, and, you know, he's like an entrepreneur and an experimenter, you know. And he came up with a concept for a guitar pedal.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been to the NAMM show twice last year, the year before. And we've launched the F pedals, which is the Eddie Kramer signature pedal. It's a distortion pedal. And they're manufactured in Napoli.
Yeah.
Yep.
You've been there recently?
We were there. I was there twice. Yeah. It's a crazy city.
Yeah, very.
But, you know, it's very interesting, you know, with the economy in Italy not being so strong, but particularly in the south, as I discovered, you know, it's even weaker there. But there are so many talented engineers and people who are creative there. And my friend, like I told you, my partner, Francesco Sondelli, is from Napoli. And we started this company 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been very successful at the NAMM show. You should try to come out one time. It's amazing. You know how many people go there over a three-day period?
How many?
95,000 people.
Damn, that's a whole city.
It's incredible. You know where Anaheim is? Anaheim is where Disneyland is.
It's in California.
Yep. It's right next to, it's next to Disneyland. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you do the NAMM show and you have a presentation there, we were overwhelmed with orders from retailers and distributors for our pedals, because they really sound quite amazing. They're analog. Oh. And also they have a special device inside the pedal that allows you to use our pedal board without power. In other words, as soon as you put the pedal anywhere near the pedal board, it lights up all by itself with no wires. It's called wireless power.
Oh, yeah, it's better than ghost power.
Yep.
Beyond.
So anyway, so what I was trying to tell you is there's a long history about my love for Italy right from the 60s into the 70s when I bought a house and coming back. I love going to Italy. This trip was a fantastic one. I did the FIM event, which was, like I said, had a couple of problems, but
yeah.
Overall, it was really good because the audience was so excited, and I was so glad to be there. Genoa is a beautiful town. I love Genoa. We walked all over. The food, of course, is incredible. And then we went from there to Lake Como to look at the manufacturers of silk, because, you know, the silk manufacturers are all in Lake Como.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's another company that we have, my partner, AJ, she has a company called Luna Scarves. Luna Finery. And Luna Finery is making luxury, high-end men's and women's scarves, accessories, you know, for the boutiques, the boutique shops. And we wanted to see how the manufacturing was done. And, my God, what an education we got up there in Lake Como. It was fantastic. So there you are. That's my whole story about Italy.
Yeah. And what about your forthcoming book, From the Other Side of the Glass?
Well, I'm working on it with this guy named Duff McKagan. You may have heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know who he is?
The bass player from Guns N' Roses.
I didn't hear him. Yeah, no, I'm working on it with Duff. He's a I don't know if you know this. He's a fantastic writer.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that. I only know him as a bass player.
Well, check it out. He had a book out last year that was on the New York Times bestseller list. He writes for ESPN. He writes for Rolling Stone. For the Seattle Times. He's a very, very good writer, and he really understands, obviously he understands the rock and roll side. Yeah. So we've been working on this book together, and we're not finished yet. It's going to be another 6 months before I finish it. And it's basically my story from when I was born, you know, in South Africa, in Cape Town, and then going to England and becoming an engineer and working with Hendrix and the Stones and Zeppelin and the Beatles and blah, 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 and Traffic, all those bands. And then coming to America in 68 and then keep working with Jimmy and just my whole history all the way up to today.
But
that's what it's about.
Yeah, and everyone knows your amazing work with Jimi Hendrix and even the Beatles and Led Zeppelin. But you also work with Kiss, for example, the Three Alive album, or Love Gun, Rock and Roll Over. How was working with Kiss?
Well, you know, I started working with Kiss, actually, in 75,
I guess.
Well, actually, no. It was actually before that.
Yeah.
When they first started, it was 73, 74, even.
Oh.
I did the demo.
Ah, okay.
At Electric Lady Studios, which got them their record deal.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, they were cool. I mean, I knew who they were because, you know, they were always hanging out at the studio. They did an album before they were Kiss, so you know the history. Do you know about them, their history?
No. They did an album before naming themselves Kiss?
Well, before they were Kiss, they were a band called Wicked Lester.
Mm-hmm. Wicked Lester.
Wicked Lester was not a very good group, and they put the I had nothing to do with it. I just knew that they were in the studio because obviously I was running Electric Lady at that time, and I saw them, you know, hanging out. And that record came out, it just did nothing. What we say in the business, it went straight into the toilet.
Oh.
You know what that means, right?
Yeah, definitely. Also in Italian, it's the same.
Straight in the toilet. Anyway, then they came to me and asked me, look, you know, we've got an idea for a new band. It's a hard rock band. And they asked me if I'd do the demo, and I said, sure. And we cut five songs, and those songs were the main songs which formed the core of their first show, which was had Black Diamond, you know, all those cool songs on there.
Those classics.
And yeah, all the classic tracks, you know, Firehouse, you know, all that stuff. That was all on the demo. And that got them their record deal, and then I didn't do the first album, not the second. I think they did three albums before I got a phone call from the president of their record label and said, hey, you want to do a Kiss live record? I said, yeah, that could be interesting. And I decided to do it because it was a challenge, you know, here are a bunch of guys with makeup, explosions. They wear big 6-inch heels. They're jumping around on the stage. It's very tough for them to keep everything in tune and in time. So for me, this was a big challenge, and I said, yeah, this is going to be fun. And that was a lot of work putting that record together.
Yeah, I can imagine.
A lot of work.
Then yeah. You did also the second and the third live albums, and that's awesome.
That's right. And also, I think I did 7 albums with them. Yeah. And, you know, they were always a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah.
And, of course, I did Ace's solo album.
Yeah.
Which was wonderful. I mean, I really enjoyed working with Ace. He's a great guitar player. Much underrated.
Yeah, definitely. You did, like, Frehley's Comet, Trouble Walking, and in fact, another very interesting part of your career is, in my opinion, the 80s. You worked with Triumph, Alcatraz, Pretty Maids, Anthrax, Loudness. What do you remember about those crazy years, the 80s?
Well, I mean, the 80s were terrible. I always
oh
thought
my God.
It was an awful period. However, what was happening, there were two things going on. There was the thing that I didn't like was what we call the hair bands, where the hairspray, you know,
yeah,
hairspray band where the hair stood straight up and they were kind of phony. But then there was this other side to it where you had bands like Anthrax who were really trying to change the way hard rock metal stuff was sounding. And there were very cool bands like Triumph, Whitesnake, all the bands you mentioned, and those bands were really trying to do something good, whereas there was a lot of phony hair bands, which I didn't like. But it was a crazy time, because I think it was a transition from one era to the next, you know, and then that was the beginning of the heavy metal era, I think, and heavy metal is still with us, you know.
Yeah, and you also did Fastway from Fast Eddie Clark. I remember that awesome movie, you know, Trick or Treat. Do you remember it?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, Fast Eddie was great. That was a one-time record. That was a fabulous record. The whole performance of the whole band with this Irish singer, what's his name?
Oh,
damn, I can't remember his name.
The singer
from Fast Eddie's band was great. It's a young Irish kid. And it was a great band, you know. You know, that was a great track.
Yeah.
Like I said, there were some things in the 80s that were just good, and the rest of it was terrible.
Yeah. And how is it, you know, to produce a new band nowadays, these days?
Well, it's you know, the whole music industry has completely changed in the last 10 years, everything has changed forever. Fortunately and unfortunately, it's, you know, we're living in an age where kids want instantaneous satisfaction. And to me, that's not a good idea. What I think there's going to be a reaction, and there is a reaction right now, where fans of music are dissatisfied, A, with the way that music is being produced and how it sounds, because it's all done digitally and it's all perfect and all of that. And it's all heavily compressed, which I hate.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you know, you have the idea, the concept that, oh, I just want to download that one song. Kids today don't have the patience to sit down and listen to a whole album, 10, 12 songs that has a thought process going through it, that there's a theme to the record, and that these musicians have thought about their music carefully and worked it out. You know, 15, 20 years ago, we were able to make an album worth of music that was carefully thought out, worked out. Bands went on the road, they tested their music out to make sure that it sounded good and got through to the audience. And then by the time they got into the studio, they had their shit together and you had a great record.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, oh, well, we can build a track with a bass and a drum, and then we add this and we add that, and then it's all perfect. And that's not what rock and roll is about.
No, and also, you know, the sound. I get a lot of promotional stuff for my radio show, hard rock and heavy metal. Don't you think that nowadays, like, dynamics are dead?
There is no dynamic. That's the problem. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's all what we call flatline. In other
flatline,
words, the mastering engineers are being told by the band, the manager, the record company, make this thing as loud as you possibly can and louder than the other guy, and then they compress it so much that there's no room for any dynamics. And a lot of musicians are going against that and saying, damn, we want analog tape, we want the old way we used to record, because there's something about it. You listen to Listen, there's a brand new re-release of Zeppelin's 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
With remixes, but the point I'm making is that why do the musicians and fans love Zeppelin? Well, think about it. There's a band that played with dynamics.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Tremendous dynamics, and they were, and the stuff that we recorded was on tape, and tape just sounds better than digital. Period.
Yeah, it's tough, because even when you play it in a radio show, it sounds awful when there's no dynamics and it's all compressed and loud.
And when you play a band, even from the 80s, it wasn't that bad.
No.
You know. You play something from Loudness, even that Japanese band, or Triumph, or Whitesnake, or any of those bands, it still sounded pretty good, because it still had some of that 70s thing hold it over to the 80s. It's just when you think about the way the market is today, the record company, there's only three record companies left. The rest of them are independents. Bands are putting out their own music. They upload it, download it, stream it, whatever. And the quality is just not there anymore, which is why I think there's going to be a revolution against that. And if you look at what's happening in America, bands want to put out vinyl. They want to put out really good quality, limited edition, you know, and then try to make the money from the merchandising, from the live shows.
Yeah. I've seen bands like releasing vinyls plus, you know, a flash drive included. Then that's awesome.
Yeah, vinyl with a flash drive. There you go. You get both.
And finally, what, you know, advices would you give to younger bands in rock and roll?
Give it up. That's no good. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, I think, you know, look, there's always going to be room for great performances,
mm-hmm,
with great material that is well rehearsed, that is when the band seriously has learned their instruments and has figured out, okay, the only way for us to be tight is to get in there and play the worst clubs first. You got to start at the bottom, play every shitty bar, every terrible venue. You have to just continue to tour and then work on your music, work on your craft, rehearse, practice, write songs as many as you can. Some of them will be terrible, but you'll, out of 20 songs, you should be able to come up with 3 or 4 or 5 great songs. Record those, try to record it analog if you can, convert it into digital, dump it into Pro Tools, but try to retain the essence of what you believe in, but never give up. Never, ever give up.
Okay, no fear then.
No fear. You got it.